Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Hello there. The show is brought to you by Levi Solicitors. So we'll do you 10% off your legal fees, 15% off conveyancing instructions until the end of September 2021. LeviSolicitors.co.uk/The Square Ball. I'm Dan Moylan. Hello. With me is Michael Normanton.
Hello.
And Moscow White, Daniel Chapman.
Hello.
So this show is all about finding out what's been said about Leeds United, both by you and by the opposition. We've got the audio version in your podcast app. You can also find it now on your YouTube channel. First, we'll take the temperature of Leeds United in the wake of the Liverpool game. It's been a little bit fractious, is it safe to say, on the internet? I mean, Moscow, you did a little match report and some tweets that you've sent out from the Square Ball account that have upset a lot of Liverpool fans. There's been a lot of muting going on.
I don't know how much more I could have been nice about Virgil van Dijk, Mo Salah, all their players, saying that their reaction to what happened to Harvey Elliott was exemplary. And it was something that occurred to me. I watched the game back, and when it got to that point, because I was so distracted, as anyone who watched or listened to the match ball will know, by Jurgen Klopp's behaviour, but I was struck by the contrast with all the players. And on the question of whether it was a red card or not, Mo Salah didn't even... We know that Mo Salah loves a free kick. Didn't even ask for a free kick when Struyck did the tackle. It was only when he saw that Harvey Elliott was injured that he then wanted
you shouldn't have said Mo Salah loves a free kick. That's going to be the next thing. You're going to have people showing you videos of him staying on his feet now.
But from the very low expectations of footballers' behaviour, you see something like that happen on a football pitch, they'll often go to the player who's tackled them and start fighting them. And there'll be a brawl or breakout, all kinds of... It happened with Son and Gomez. There was players coming on and trying to attack him for what he'd done. Whereas in this instance, I think a couple of the Liverpool players went to the referee and were like, are you going to do something about this? But there was a lot more of them going to Struyck and seeing that he was upset and going like... And Virgil van Dijk in particular was the one said, went up to him. You can see he mouths up, it's Pascal, and he goes and has a word with him. He's kind of arm on the shoulder, having a chat, like, what was your view of this? And I think making sure he was all right, as much as they were making sure Elliot's all right, from the two perspectives. Klopp, on the other hand...
here we go.
I mean, one of the more interesting replies this morning was somebody saying that, of course, he didn't go to check on... Because, as I was saying on the match ball, he was more worried, it seemed to me, about shouting things at the fans in the West Stand behind the dugouts than checking on his player. And somebody said, well, of course, he didn't rush to check on his player. He's not allowed out of his technical area. What did everybody watch?
Just on that, by the way, can I just say, I mean, I know we touched on it on the match ball. I was over in the East Stand and I didn't pick up on any of the Klopp drama at all until afterwards. And I want to say, by the way, I've not watched any of the game back, so I can't offer any sort of informed opinion on this. The only bit I've seen is just the bit you've clipped of Klopp on the pitch telling the referee what to do. But I've refused to engage in any of the analysis or any of the replays.
That's good. But that'll be useful.
But yeah, I didn't realise just how much had gone on there, is all I was going to say.
Klopp shouting at the West Stand is weird, because he's doing the... covers his mouth and he's obviously swearing at people, but behind a hand, so they presumably in the crowd noise, they can't even hear what he's saying.
Well, apparently,
what is he doing it for?
Somebody... Well, as I described on the match ball, it was that progression of people didn't realise why people were running on the pitch, why medics were running on the pitch while the game was still going on. There was still a football match in the northeast corner while there's people running on the pitch. And I think the initial reaction of the people behind the dugouts was, get off the pitch. And then people saw, it dawned on people, as, oh, this must be serious. Klopp stuck. He got caught in that first reaction. And forgive me, I can't remember their name, but I noticed somebody replying who sits behind the dugouts that the C-bomb was audible from Klopp towards the fans in the West Stand. And then he came back with his hand over his mouth and kept shouting the C-word, which obviously we, in polite company such as this, well, as it, and you know, that's only one person saying that that's what he was saying, but he was very angry about the reaction of the fans behind the dugout, and it seemed to me like that's not really the priority. If he had run onto the pitch, I mean, it's interesting, we can get caught up in kind of Klopp's reactions to stuff, but I wonder what it would have been like had that happened on the other touchline, would he have run across the pitch to make sure he's okay? Was it just because he was in front of him? How much time he seemed to spend talking to the referee rather than attending to the player? But then he's not a doctor, so why the hell should he be messing around with Harvey Elliott's?
He's not a referee either, I should say. So, no. So that would have been, if anyone was going to be getting in the referee's ear, it should have been the fourth official who was stood very near to it and will have had a good view as well.
There is a contrast. The last thing I'd say is just as a contrast, and it is a sort of extreme example, but when Christian Eriksen collapsed on the pitch in the European Championships, Denmark's manager stayed in the technical area throughout, and you saw them and all the staff just stood where they were, waiting for the medical staff who were dealing with Christian Eriksen to tell them what was going on. And yeah, I've seen managers go onto the pitch to see what has happened to an injured player before. I can picture Howard Wilkinson doing it, but I can picture them saying to the referee, can I come on? Because this looks serious. And the referee saying, yeah, come over. And then not engaging in a big brouhaha with the referee. Like, well, we need to discuss about what disciplinary action you're going to take. So it all got, maybe it's because it did happen in there. And I can very much understand Klopp getting carried away in the heat of the moment and all that. But what I would contrast it with, and this is where the accusations that are coming my way, our way of it being a tribal thing, is that I thought the players, Liverpool's players, were excellent. None of them seemed to be going after Struyck in any way. There was no blame. There was no accusations. They weren't one around with waving for cards in the air or any of that. They were all worried about their teammate and then showing some empathy to him of like, and the general feeling of, I don't think you meant to do that, did you? Even when Salah is a metre away from it happening and didn't even appeal for a free kick, just turned away. And then when they realised that, as we've all seen on the photographs and the replays, that Elliot's ankle got caught under Struyck's following leg, they've recognised, and professional footballers in that situation,
they know the game. They know the game.
Yeah,
it felt to me like Salah had the very obvious human reaction of seeing someone badly injured and being like, "Shit, someone needs to come and there are people here who can help. Like, so just get on and sort this." Whereas it felt like with Klopp, his complaints that he's had already this season, like he was complaining about Burnley and things, it felt like this was maybe, if he could redo it, he may well do this entirely differently, I suspect. But it felt like he had got some bottled up frustrations about people being too physical with his team this season, which maybe they have been in other games. I've not watched their other games. And with it being Burnley, I can well imagine that may have been the case. Well, I don't feel
the evidence last night suggests it is. Yeah.
We saw it when we played Burnley, Ashley Barnes. I mean, that was a fairly physical challenge. Robust
it was. But I don't feel like this wasn't a particularly vicious challenge or anything, but I feel like maybe him seeing one of his players injured from it made him, in his mind, it kind of triggered some like, well, I knew this had happened. This is because we're not getting enough protection. And it's maybe that spilled over into he was actually complaining about referees for the past month. It all fell into the one ear of
Craig Pawson. And in the heat of the moment, you can understand it, can't you?
Then in the heat of the moment, you can also praise Van Dijk. And that was the gift that I kind of clipped, and I used it with the distracted boyfriend meme, because you see when Van Dijk goes over to Struyck, Klopp is in the background staring at him as if he's like, why is he even talking to Pascal Struyck? And then blows his cheeks out like, well, I don't know why Virgil's gone in and spoken to him. So there are two possible reactions, and it seems like everybody was exemplary. Apart from Jurgen Klopp, really. All the medical staff ran on. Bielsa, there was a moment when he seemed to be going over to Klopp to say, what are you getting so irate about? And then realised how serious it was and was like, right, I'll just go and stand over here. It's nothing to do with me. Our medical staff got involved, doctors. And I think what was aggravating me about Klopp shouting at the West Stand was everybody there behind those dugouts, it was an initial reaction to, why are people running on the pitch when the game is still going on? And all it needed was to see the seriousness of it. And then the next even breath. And I think everybody was getting that as a, oh, this must be really bad. Fine.
Which was exactly my reaction, because I was the other side of the ground and yeah. I didn't even realise something had happened there. My eyes were trained over on the northwest corner.
So everybody behind those dugouts is ready to calm down and go, oh, right, understand now. And then you've got Klopp running in the middle of them, calling them all names and shouting at them.
To be honest, the question that follows from this is it actually a problem that he got irate in the moment? Because that's what a lot of the clapbacks are. I mean, the telling the referee what to do is a separate incident, is it not?
Yeah, I think him having to go at the West Stand, obviously you shouldn't do it, and you should be, as a manager, quite used to being next to people shouting stuff. I guess if he's heard someone having a go at Elliot for going down, and then he's like, look, his foot's all over the place, you're being out of order, I can see why he's annoyed at that, I suppose. Whether or not he should just, you know, let it ride and just think and just concentrate on his own player and his own stuff. Like, it happens all the time with players. Like when the cop was singing, Alexander Arnold singing, he was just a
shit Kyle
Walker. And then he assisted a goal and was just gave it a little flick of the ear. I think,
great, isn't it?
And you start thinking, well, fair enough. Yeah, like, you know, he was getting it a minute ago. He's now just done this. He's obviously really good.
Yeah, you're dangling the red rag, aren't you? And, the ball occasionally will gore you. And that's what football is. And that's why it's funny.
Yeah. Klopp's response, though, was very different. If he had gone to the cop after assisting a goal and started yelling swear words into people's faces, I would have thought differently of it. I think as it was, it was a recognition of, like, it's only messing around this. It's fine. Like, you give me a bit back. And I quite like it when players do that, truthfully.
I think what surprises me about Klopp, and the reason it sort of, I wanted to highlight it a bit, is because he is supposed to be an example as a coach of some kind of elite mentality. Like, his brain is in his footballing sense, stronger than any of ours. And he's got this sort of laser focus that means he's an incredible tactician, an incredible football coach. So not being able to shut out the noise from behind the dugout in a moment when it really is the attention was on a player being very badly injured in front of him. And it's kind of why he was so ragged in that situation, where I've seen other managers just concentrate on getting the player attended to, getting him off the pitch, and then anything else about what he'd been saying after playing Burnley and all the other considerations, what people are outside saying behind the dugout, is all kind of should be outside of his tunnel at that moment. And it's strange to see a Champions League winning coach who is supposed to be kind of the absolute pinnacle of his profession being so unprofessional in that moment. And it's like, yeah, you can talk about natural reactions, but one of the things that people celebrate about elite sports people is that their reactions are almost so fine-tuned to the point where they're not natural. And that's kind of why they're supposed to be so much better than us. And the humanity of it is actually something I find easier to relate to in the way Klopp was behaving than if he was just standing there robotically. But I think there's maybe a middle ground where I would have expected him to behave more like Virgil van Dijk. And because there's a perfect example there of somebody who is the leader on the pitch acting in a much more professional manner than the leader in the dugout. Mm. And it's an interesting contrast.
I get why it's interesting to you, but I'm left with the thought of man gets slightly angry at thing that happened at football match when player's leg is hanging off. So it's understandable to me, even if you don't necessarily agree with it. I know what you're getting at with the elite coach thing, but I mean, like, you know, Bielsa is stoic to a ridiculous level, and he just stands there and isn't completely unflappable. Just to return to the fourth official, by the way, I did ask the question on the match ball about whether the fourth official can advise the ref. I looked at the rules, and yes, they are considered part of the on-field team, is the fourth official. You've got the ref, the two assistants, and the fourth official all considered part of the on-field team, and they can advise.
Do we know if they did?
I don't know. It's still not 100% clear to me what the order of this was, whether the ref really was going to give a red from the outset. You can't say they did because, well, there was no foul given, was there? So if the fourth official seen it closer up and advised him.
The fourth official being a Huddersfield Town fan, Andy Madley, just to get that in there.
And Pawson's Sheffield United as well, isn't he? So we need to be careful not to get caught up in conspiracies here.
Without the audio and the exact order of what happened, it's hard to know how they arrived at the decision. And I doubt the way
have you seen
it
his legs. I think that was it.
Yeah, I think so. The way it gets kind of, I think that's probably right, because it gets discussed as if it's kind of a very set process where one person says one thing and somebody replies. But from the bits of audio that we've heard from that Australian referee when he was mic'd up, you hear it's more of an ongoing conversation. So I'm sure that it wasn't like VAR sit there silently twiddling their thumbs. They'll be in the earpiece of the referee telling him things about what are happening from their perspective. And it feels like from the way they've described it as Paulson was always going to send him off, I think was the phrase. And I wonder, you know, that's come through the Martin Tyler filter. And I sometimes feel like at the moment when Martin Tyler's explaining the game, sometimes we then have to explain what Martin Tyler means about what he's explaining.
They can hear VAR, can't they, as well? That's the other thing.
Right. And I think the vibe I get the impression that it was like is Andy Paulson has said, I think I'll have to send him off for this, won't I? VAR have had a look at it and said, yeah, that's right. And that seems to be that's the way.
It's more organic a process than you're led to believe. Like they're not checking through a list of items. Yeah, fair enough.
If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Let's get to the stuff that was fed back to us then, because we spent a long time on that. People talking about the red. Lee, Aidan, Paul, Spadge, Andrew Larkin all contributing stuff on this. Everybody is basically saying, most of the pundits have said, it wasn't a red. And people pointing out both Lee and it was Spadge who both pointed out Liam Cooper's that he did on Mane about 10 minutes afterwards. A red card there might have been useful. Take Liam Cooper.
No centre-backs. We don't need any centre-backs.
Out the equation.
Charlie Cresswell, Newcastle is your moment.
Yeah, I mean, it is what it is, isn't it? I guess we'll see what happens in the fallout. We're still not clear as to whether they're appealing it or not.
And we've got the message from Harvey Elliott himself,
yep,
haven't we, where he says he's obviously seen the footage himself and says, all fair enough and never a red card. And it doesn't even seem like it was a foul. It's an accident and it does
happen. They won't rescind it, though. Let's just go on record and say that. There's no way they'll rescind it.
And there is,
if there's been any form of contact between Strike's trailing leg and Harvey Elliott, they'll uphold it.
And I'm not completely immune to the idea. I get the logic in it that if somebody's ankle has ended up that badly damaged, then there was something wrong with the tackle. But I also think in this case, what was wrong was an accident. We've all seen it. We all know what happened. There's no point in going over it too intently. But nobody, and that's why I was looking at the players' reactions, having heard from all the ex-players, everybody who has ever set foot on a football field in a professional capacity, seems to be like, good tackle that went badly wrong. That's a shame. And don't minimise the word shame. It's, you know, it is horrible how it turned out that way. But it's just an accident that happens. It could have happened under any kind of circumstances. Just sometimes things do happen and they are unfortunate.
The ball was at the side of him, wasn't it, when he comes in and hooks it. And he gets there just ahead of Elliot. But Elliot is doing the thing that you're also taught to do, which is step across the ball so that it blocks a defender getting to it. It just so happened that by the time he stepped across, Stroik was already there, which meant his leg was there, and it was
Stroik's.
There was nothing malicious in it whatsoever, which I think is, well, we'll get onto him in propaganda about how malicious it was, but I think most people saw it the same way.
The contact comes once Stroik has won the ball and is turning away with it, and it's his other leg that is just, he's using it to help himself move on, and that's what has trapped the ankle, and it's not to,
but that's the reason for the red card, isn't it? That is it. Yeah. Quite simply. If the lunge was such that that's contributed to him winning the ball back, that's what they're going to say. Anyway, let's get on to the feedback. Let's start with a proper bloodletting. You remember we had Sinking Feeling contribute the other week, who sounds like fun at parties. We weren't harsh enough was one of the themes that that seemed to come through. Probably about us, they're talking here, not necessarily the red card. Sinking Feeling, I grow weary of Moscow's wide-eyed, childlike, chirping optimism about games where we've been absolutely stuffed. To harp on about a red card, who cares at that point, when the real issue is how utterly abject we were, seems a disservice. Yes, Liverpool are a world-class team, but it doesn't mean we should perform this poorly, as in see the second half of last season to see how you can compete against these sides. Something is seriously wrong this season, and let's be honest, Dan James is bang average.
Taking James with him is a little bit harsh at this stage, although we did probably sort of agree with that not so long ago, but let's give him a chance. Yeah, I felt a bit miserable about the performance, I have to say.
That's what it was. It was the hopelessness of it that really got to me when we did the match ball. It's like, well, what's the point in any of this?
Because I think the thing of last season was...
Because the goal was having
a go at in these games, wasn't it? And I know it went badly wrong in some, like Chelsea and Man United and stuff, where we did get properly a bit of a shoo-in.
Tottenham.
Well.
Leicester. Crystal Palace.
But, I mean, the...
They weren't quite like this, though. Like, the Spurs game, we were in that for a long period. This one...
Spurs game, we were terrible.
Were we?
Yeah.
I can't even remember.
Spurs away, we were awful.
Yeah, we were absolutely capitulated. Absolutely.
Yeah, spanked 3-0.
But it's been flagged up like the style change, which maybe is a symptom of where we're at. Andre, who's in Sydney, say that we seem to have morphed into a long ball team. I don't think we have. I just think that people have figured us out more and we are being forced into playing long balls rather than playing through midfield, which is what we're good at. And I've said it the other week. When we play through the lines, that's when we're good and we're effective. But a team like Liverpool, who are as good as they are, stopped us playing through the lines. They just cut off all the supply. They knew where to press us to force us into those sorts of... actions.
Maybe it's the playing through midfield bit that is the problem, given we have Calvin Phillips in there by himself an awful lot of the time. We do seem to be going longer, and I don't know if it's because we've realised that maybe Bamford and Rafinha can latch onto some of those balls sometimes, but yeah, there wasn't much of the hair-raising playing out from the back, which I know in itself we got a bit stressed at points last season, but it doesn't feel like we're doing too much of that anymore, which...
But teams are sitting on us high up the pitch. You see what Liverpool did. They pressed us so, so high. And so they know where to do it. You do it in out wide positions, don't you? When it's going between like the left centre back and the left back or on the other side, and you cut off that supply back across to the other, you know, to the other centre half, and you get forced backwards and it's going via Melier all the time. And they wait to press you in wide areas. If you look at what teams do, it's what Burnley did. They shut off the supply down the flanks. And I think that's what's forcing us to bypass a lot of the time, particularly because, Rodrigo's identified here by a load of people. Philip, Tom, Jacob, Aiden, Adsham, Alex, Ryan, all just flagging him up. It needs to stop, doesn't it? Stop playing him in midfield, because if Bielsa persists with this, because we were so solid at the end of last season when he wasn't in there doing that, when we had the extra midfielder, when we were slightly more conservative, I think, in our approach, in games like Liverpool, where we managed to stifle them, whereas he just doesn't work in there and everybody can see it. I can see it. All the people there can see it. Can you see it?
I see it. Yeah, I think him there is a major problem. And he's weird, is Rodrigo, because he's not... We've had lots of bad players in our time outside of the Premier League. We've seen Luke Varney, and you can say, yes, he's not very good at running. He's not very good at passing. He can't really control the ball. He's crap at shooting. He can't dribble. You can get a go through all these things. Rodrigo's sort of... He's fine at everything. Like, he's not...
He's a good footballer.
He's obviously not a bad player, but what he's meant to do in that role, he just doesn't do. So he can't do it. So we can't have him there.
No, he needs to go to the bench. And I don't care if it means having a £27 million sub on the bench. That's where he needs to be, because he's back up for Bamford at the minute. And that needs to be accepted. And put a midfielder in midfielder, for God's sake.
Or please. Tyler Roberts, Moscow.
Or Tyler Roberts. Or is the problem Dallas playing instead of Click?
Yeah, I mean, I would... For Newcastle, I really hope Click is back in instead of Rodrigo, and I think that solves a huge amount of problems for us.
But what about Click instead of Dallas, and maybe that makes Rodrigo play better? Because I don't think... I think Rodrigo's taking a lot of the heat because he is disappointing, and, you know, we immediately bring up the fee. But then I don't think Stuart Dallas was good. And if you're looking for a reason why we didn't go through midfield against Liverpool, everybody's thinking, well, Rodrigo's rubbish. But I mean, Stuart Dallas was our other midfielder, and there's got to be a reason why we didn't go through him very much. And, you know, the two players who were in midfield for Liverpool, Fabinho and Thiago Silva, who are No, he's not Silva. He's Alcantara, isn't he? Let's stick to Thiago because I get them mixed up.
I think you've made up two other players in that.
What's he called?
Alcantara, what are you trying to say?
Thiago, yeah.
Thiago, that fella. Alcantara.
Like I said.
Who are very good, aren't they?
Yeah.
So there's an argument there for why you would avoid that part of the pitch. But then I do wonder if we get better link up with Click, who is a midfielder in midfield, instead of Dallas, who is not a midfielder, he's a winger who's been converted and has been playing there superbly. And whether that then gets more out of Rodrigo, he starts to play better because we have a better player or a more competent midfielder with him. We have options, and the change I would make at the moment is I'd keep Dallas, but I would put Click in instead of Rodrigo. Yes. I think that's perfectly fair to do. But I think it's also fair to look at, well, are there other problems in midfield beyond just Rodrigo's comparable to Luke Varney, or not comparable to Luke Varney? I'm being unfair to you there, but you know, there's more to it than just that. And Click, this is kind of a point, I guess this is probably more wild-eyed, childish chirping, I suppose, but the build-up to this game, if you remember Bielsa in his press conference, wasn't just talking about commercialism in football and that. He was talking about three games in an international break and travelling, and then you add in Click with COVID, Stuart Dallas, we don't know why he left the Northern Ireland squad, what the problem was. You had Bamford away with England. Who else was away? Roberts was away with Wales. Dan James, in the press conference 2 days before the game, he's asked about Dan James, and Bielsa's answer was like, well, I've basically never met him. And I think coming into this game off of 2 weeks when I think of our goalkeepers, Melier, Klaassen were both certainly away. I think Van der Heuvel might have been away as well. I don't know who was playing in goal for any of our training sessions. I don't know who was playing up front because Sam Greenwood, Joffrey Gellhart were both away. So were we practicing for this match with Max Dean and then Rafinha, who was distracted by whether he's going to Brazil or not? But there's been a lot of disruption so far this season. It's been very stop-start. And I think, and when I look at the way we're playing and the way that we do seem to be going longer and the way that the rhythm isn't there, where players aren't finding each other. You know, Liam Cooper's been off with Steve Clarke for 2 weeks instead of doing any Leeds United stuff. We look like a team that's not got its rhythm, and this is after what is probably the first long break in the summer since the start of the promotion season, if you count the first lockdown as kind of somewhere where momentum kind of carried through in the middle of the championship season. Then there wasn't a long holiday after promotion. We were very quickly into the Premier League. So we had all that momentum until May and then a break, and now trying to get back into it. And within three games, we played three games, and then everybody's all off doing.
But it's the same
other
for
stuff.
Everyone, though, isn't it? On that, in that respect,
like, it is.
It's hard to say it's just affected us.
Other teams are better than us, though, and that's where it is. I think it's easier for Liverpool to adapt to that because they've got better players. We have less good players, so we need to work harder to overcome things like that. There's more for Leeds to do than I think Liverpool, who, you know, this is the team that they've really not changed since they were getting 100 points and winning the league and then winning the Champions League. So they know what they're doing. We are a long way off that and we have to work harder. But it's difficult to work harder when Steve Clarke is in your centre-back's ear rather than...
I think there's a certain truth in what you're saying. I do agree. I think what we need is we just need a win to kickstart it.
And then another international break.
Yeah. But don't you think, like, we need an easy win or a comfortable win, which I know you don't get the opportunity to have those in the Premier League. That's the one downside to this, is that you need to earn it. And I do agree, there's not been a lot of momentum. You're absolutely...
It's been a horribly tough start as well. It is worth saying that, because Burnley away is the easiest of our games that we've had so far. And it's not an easy game, isn't Burnley, because of their style. And it's very hard to get any rhythm going against them, isn't it? So we've not had a game yet where we've been able to have any fluency about us, which, when you look at, I mean, we'll come on to it in the next podcast, but I was looking at Newcastle's start and they got to have, like, Norwich at home as a start. They've got us at home, which is, you know, a winnable game from their point of view. I know it's for us as well, but, you know, they've had some pretty soft games in there to start, whereas we've had, well, two of the four have been the games that at the start of your season, you do go through and you go, well, 0 points, 0 points, and it's fine to do that. Like, it is in Everton at home again, 1-3 on a good day, but a point isn't terrible. And a point at Burnley, as we said after that game, a point at Burnley wouldn't have been a bad result at the end of last season when we were 10th or whatever. We'd have gone, all right, well, fine. You know, that's an all right point, isn't it? Which shows we're sort of steady in this league. Coming as it does when we can see we don't have enough points on the board already, it's just a little bit edgier, isn't it? But I don't think anyone's... I think because a few people accused us of being like... Well, there's some people saying we weren't negative enough. Some people also said we were too damning and too pessimistic and it's going to be fine, isn't it? And that is probably true. And I say that as a very pessimistic person. And people should know it comes from a good place. I'm not being a pessimist just for the sake of it. Like, it's almost like...
draining as you are.
It's an avoidance disappointment mechanism. But I think we probably are fine. We've got an easier run of games to come and let's have a look after that.
Let's finish on the positive then, because you mentioned it there. Jimmy McWalker said, painfully shit, which it was. We were miles off the pace, let's say that. They were fantastic. Mm-hmm. I mean, like, people have picked out the fullbacks as well. Aiden picked out Firpo, which we mentioned on the match ball. Again, Ayling has been fairly toilet so far this season. Joe, Angry Chris, Aiden also picking out Ayling. They're up against Mane and Salah, who are like two of the elite wingers in the world in a brilliant side. And we know that. It's just sobering that we have to be reminded of the golf in class, because we have a bad day, they have a good day. And that's all it takes for a thump into a result.
One of the comparisons I looked at, I didn't watch their game, but Leicester against Manchester City. Leicester, who we're trying to emulate and who were, you know, I thought they were going to win the league last season. They were running it close. They didn't. They had one shot on target against Man City and lost 1-0. And the problem with these teams is it gets boring talking about the golfing class, but it's not long since Liverpool and Manchester City have just gone through seasons just ticking off wins.
Yeah.
They do that. What they did to us on Sunday, they just do to everybody as a matter of routine. And so trying to draw too many conclusions from about our side gets lost in, well, it feels unhelpful because it's more about Liverpool being brilliant and being able to stop us being any good than us being lost and damned and never going to be any good forever. And there were good bits as well. It feels in compared to the overall result like you're clutching at straws, but if Rodrigo had put that chance away in the first 4 minutes and then we're 1-0 up in 5 minutes, we've got 85 minutes to try and defend and see out the game. And although a lot of it was down to luck, and it feels like a hair's breadth between that game finishing 1-1 because we mess up at a corner, or the goal where we let Salah go through and score still happens, or it being 28-0. was really that if Mane had his boots on, it could have been embarrassing, but then, you know, he didn't. So there was something there. There was more for us in that game if we'd scored that chance. Tyler Roberts at the...
Well, games turn on moments, don't they?
Was Tyler Roberts... I can never remember if it was 1-1 or...
It was 2-0 at that point.
Right, but we get back into the game and there's a chance. And if we defended that corner. So up until... Even though there was a big gulf in class, a lot of the result did depend on small...
This is exactly what I was getting on the match
moments,
ball. Yeah. It's like because somebody picked me up saying you can't... Because I wanted to have it both ways, saying that there was a massive gulf in class, but it was always turning on fine margins. Mm. But what I was getting at was all those little fine margins, and perhaps I didn't express myself properly, but all those fine margins contribute to the gulf in class. It's all those just little moments, every single little moment. If you don't take your chance when Rodrigo, if you whacked it at Alisson's head and he put that in, it changes the shape of the game, doesn't it? Because it was a little bit end-to-end just initially.
Yeah. And that's why football is good as a sport, because you can have quite large gulfs in class and things can just not fall for you.
And
you can get a break there and they hit the post and they should score and you happen to bundle one in from a corner. And, you know, it's why football is pretty much the best sport in the world, other than when, truthfully, you get teams like Liverpool and Man City who just win every week. And that does kind of ruin it.
Yeah.
And that's where that point about training comes in, because I think with more time, Junior Firpo, I know he's been criticised for the way he struggled against Salah, but, you know, you're going to struggle against Salah. But there were moments when he's linking up with Harrison and doing back heels in Liverpool's penalty area when he had a shot in Liverpool's penalty area. The chance to set up Roberts... I don't think Firpo was involved, but it was Harrison and Dallas playing like the old days and then rolling it across and Roberts finishing like the old days. But there's those signs in there where if you play Firpo longer, not his fourth game and not when he started injured, and ifs and buts and whatever, but I think judging him on his fourth match against Liverpool, when I think it could be a very different player in his 20th match against Newcastle, or who else is garbage in this division, Watford. So just because early in the season we can't do it against Liverpool doesn't mean that it's never going to be good ever again. And yeah, we were in the game and we had chances to make it better. We didn't take them. It's frustrating. It's awful. And everything's unfair.
Yeah, just returning to what Jimmy said and to close out this section, he did say, painfully shit, but perspective. It's 1 point per game to stay up. 2 wins and a draw from our next 5 and we're back on track. And you've got Newcastle, West Ham, Watford, Southampton and Wolves in there, which is doable.
The Square Ball Podcast.
Small details are big surfaces. Tight corners are odd shapes. Flat, rounded, textured or tall. Whatever your next project, there's a spray paint pattern that's just right. Because Rust-Oleum's new Custom Spray 5-in-1 gives you control with 5 different spray patterns. So you can tackle nooks, crannies, edges, and curves without worrying about drips, runs, uneven coverage, or anything else. Custom Spray 5-in-1. Only from Rust-Oleum.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.